Better than this, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't do this shit.
What's better than this? Guys, me and dudes here on the Draft Dudes podcast, presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network, and we are your hosts here on this Friday edition of the show. We got to get ready for a big weekend in the NFL. Kyle, first things first, how about those Houston Cougars covering that spread last night?
Listen,
you were nervous about it, my guy.
I would like to retroactively change Free Money Thursday to be Houston Cougars covering the spread last night. Is that possible?
Kyle.
Listen.
No. You wanted to bet SMU the whole time.
No, that's not. But who did I bet?
Houston.
All right, then. We're on the same team here.
Wait, did we have any different?
I don't think we were different at all this week. No, we're rooting for all the same things to happen.
Good. Good place to be. We normally don't have the same rooting interests.
No. And, you know, I'm not afraid to pick and choose my spots to be different, but this was really a week where, like, we said ahead of time, it feels pretty straightforward.
I have the sheet up right now. And we, in fact,
are. I know we
have
all the same picks.
The same picks. Yes.
Because you go through and mark the ones that were different with an X. And we got to the end of that podcast with no X's in an extra column. Joe, I have some exciting news.
Guys. Oh, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. You and I have officially started writing 2020 NFL Draft scouting reports.
See?
And I've done three.
Yeah. Figured you would.
You haven't had a chance to do any in the last couple days?
No, sir.
Okay. So we have one mutual player then. We both did Bryce Hall. Give me your elevator synopsis of Bryce Hall as a football player. 30 seconds starting right now.
Yeah, I think if you're a cover two, cover three quarters type team, you're going to love him. Have a lot of value to you. Competitive player, good ball skills, good length, physical type of guy that really knows how to restrict throwing windows and anticipate routes to his zone. Don't love him in man coverage. Off man coverage won't be great for him. Doesn't necessarily have that short area agility and quickness that you're looking for, but zone heavy team's going to get a good starter in Bryce Hall. Should be at least a day two pick.
Oh, got it in right at the buzzer there. Now, did you give him a film grade?
Yeah.
What did you give him?
Mid two.
Oh, I gave him a solid two as well. Great minds think alike.
Yeah. I mean, he's not going to be if you're going to run man coverage all the time, if you're the Patriots or the Eagles or something like that. With
you're probably not
going
to
be your top choice. Yeah, but if you're zone heavy team, Bills. I was just thinking of the Bills. They don't have a needed corner, but teams like that, Carolina, you'd be well served to go get them.
I want to see him in Seattle round two.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, beautiful, beautiful fit. Oh, if Seattle gets DK and Bryce Hall, brother, I might have to get me one of those green jerseys.
Yeah.
But then they have so many other stupid picks like LJ Collier and Rashad Penny.
Well, that's,
you know, I don't know if I can get behind.
I cannot defend the Rashad Penny pick. I can at least defend the Collier pick, right? They've got their own brand of football players that they like to target. Who is who is the USC defensive lineman they took in? Rasheem Green?
Rasheem Green.
He was terrible in college. He's actually a pretty solid football player for Seattle.
Is he really?
As a rotational guy on their defensive line, yeah. They got their own criteria. So
you got to give us a 30-second. Give us a 30-second on a guy that you did then.
I guess Jacob Breland.
Who'd you do besides Breland and Hall? Who was the other one?
I actually did DJ Wonnum from South Carolina.
Okay.
He's not done playing games yet, but he's a... All right, I'm going to wait till 4 minutes and 30 seconds on the recorder. All right, so Wonnum's a four-year player, true senior at South Carolina. A lot of his sacks and penetration production seem to come from slants and stunts and tackle end twists and really have some concerns with his ability to turn the apex and be able to take guys with speed off the edge. But he's a high motor guy, probably a developmental pass rusher in a 3-4 front. But this is, for me, a late day three player, despite some of the big production that he has. But I think there may be some hidden explosiveness there because he every once in a while will really drive up the field and take an offensive tackle with speed. But too many of his pass rushes are just way up the field, overshoots his landmarks, and he doesn't have the counters to really get away with not reducing his angles with his rushes.
Very good. Wow, we're talking about draft stuff on the Draft Dudes podcast.
Weird. Yeah, it's real weird. But not anymore.
We'll have to do more of that.
Now we're talking about...
Let's talk about this game last night.
Yeah.
Yeah, it started last night with this Redskins-Vikings game. Man, a lot of talking points coming away from it. But I think the biggest thing that I learned last night is Josh Norman is cooked.
Done.
And well, here's the thing, dude. I didn't realize how bad he's been. So his passer rating against his coverage this year so far, 140.7 and five penalties. Last year, it was 114.2 with seven penalties. Year before that, 114.1 with four penalties. Carolina released his ass after 2015, and that was like a big deal. Washington got one decent year out of Josh Norman, signing him to a five-year, $75 million deal, and then he's been bad. And I don't think we talk about it enough.
Well, I guess to at least be a little fair to Josh from yesterday, I believe he was only supposed to be playing in an emergency situation and Xavier Rhodes got his bell rung. So that's what put Norman into the game last night. But yes, by and large, Norman, the last 2.5 years now in DC has not been good and continuing to really just struggle in every aspect of playing corner. And,
He ran 4.66. He's never been athletic. He's almost 32 years old. It's over. He's gonna have to play safety or
what's his contract situation look like? Do you know?
So he's under contract through next year, and he's a $15.5 million cap hit. They can cut him and save 12.5 with $3 million in dead cap.
Okay, so he's getting cut this offseason, no question.
Bye. Yeah. Bye.
Now, I'm in before he gets cut, and we see all the articles for teams suggesting so-and-so should go out and sign Josh Norman to play corner. Mm-mm. No.
32 years old, slow, can't play for the last 3 years.
Can we talk about Dalvin Cook, please?
Stud.
Man. Just the step frequency, I think, is really the biggest thing that stands out for him. It was... such a huge asset of Shady McCoy at the peak of his career. It's a big asset of a guy that just came through, Joe, who ended up on your team this past draft, Devin Singletary. And guys that might not have the most dynamic athletic testing, but when you consider how quick their feet are from a step frequency standpoint, how that allows them to start, stop, in open space, make sudden cuts, constant jitterbug, change of directions so that you're breaking pursuit angles. Dalvin Cook didn't run 4.3, and I frankly could not care less because he is so effective setting you up both in the backfield and in the open space for you to either take a false step or declare yourself so he can go where you're not. One of the things I did midway through the third quarter of this game, Joe, when Dalvin was just tearing him apart, so I went back and looked at the report that I had written for Dalvin from 2017 before the draft. And I think the biggest thing that I wrote that stood out to me was talking about how through the mesh point in the backfield, he's so successful in making sight adjustments to find creases. And that's really been prominent with Minnesota kind of adopting this outside zone mentality with drafting Bradbury and putting Elflein at guard. Like, you saw in stretches of this game where those guys really can't bump bellies with interior defensive linemen, mano a mano, but they'll out-athlete you if you're going to run to the sideline. And Dalvin had a couple plays where it was straight back door. He went straight to the back door because he knew over pursuit was there, or patiently pressing up to the line. Just a really impressive cerebral performance as well as physical performance for Dalvin Cook last night.
Some numbers on Dalvin Cook so far this year, courtesy of Pro Football Focus. 3.35 yards on average after contact, and he's forced 33 missed tackles.
33,
Kyle.
Is that tops?
A ton. It probably is. If you give me a second, I can answer that question.
Wow, not being prepared for the show.
Well, I didn't know that you were going to take that to that level, but I am almost there, Kyle. My computer will load. Here we go.
The momentum is. Suspense is killing me.
Is it? Is it, Kyle? Still working on it.
I feel compelled to talk, but I really just don't have anything to say until we figure this out.
I don't know why I can't sort it. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Sorting it. Yeah. Oh, no. It's tied for first. I'll give you a dollar if you could tell me who he's tied with. And in all fairness, this person only played 7 games. And Dalvin has 8.
McCaffrey.
No, McCaffrey has 27. He's 6th.
Oh, man. 33 and played 7 games?
Yep. Dalvin Cook has 33 in 8 games.
You don't think I'm going to get it?
I don't think you will.
Is it Adrian Peterson?
No, Adrian Peterson is not high on this list at all.
Sick. Awesome. What conference?
National Football Conference.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to let me whittle it down here a little bit. Is it one of the 49ers backs?
No.
Is it Chase Edmonds?
You got to think a guy that's carried the ball a lot. No. Is it Chase Edmonds, yes.
I can tell you it's not Zeke.
It's not Zeke. Zeke is 14th.
Is it an NFC North back?
Nope.
All right, I don't know. Just tell me.
Chris Carson.
Really?
So the top, Chris Carson, 33, Dalvin Cook, 33, Josh Jacobs, 31, Derrick Henry, 30, Alvin Kamara, 29. That's your top 5.
Where's elite running back Ezekiel Elliott on this list?
14th, Kyle.
Ooh. Doesn't sound very elite. Where's elite running back Melvin Gordon on this list?
Chill.
Do you have any other takeaways from Vikings Redskins?
Josh Norman's bad. Dalvin Cook's good. Terry McLaurin runs good routes. Kirk Cousins is playing good ball. Stephon Diggs is in another planet right now. I think he just set like the record for most receiving yards in a 3-game stretch for the Vikings and beat like
Randy Moss.
Randy Moss's numbers. So Daniel Hunter's a good player. I think that's my big takeaways. I really like these Redskins defensive linemen, though. Like Ioannidis, Payne, and Allen, good player.
Yeah, that's a great foundation. And then you think about having Kerrigan outside and what Montez Sweat can be. They've got a really nice foundation for their front seven with how physical they are up front. Yeah. Real quick, Joe, do you know what we predicted the Vikings to be through 8 games before the season?
Well, they're 6-2. I would guess we had them at 4-4.
Okay. You're too low.
6-2?
We had them at 6-2.
Good.
Now, we also had them finishing 9-7. I don't think that's going to happen because we had them losing it in L.A. to the Chargers, week 15. If Mahomes doesn't play for the Chiefs game, they could very easily smother Matt Moore. We picked the Bears on the road because we picked the Vikings to beat the Bears the first time they played. So this probably a 10-plus win team here in Minnesota. They're playing really good ball if Kirk Cousins keeps playing the way he's playing now.
I think the can go either way games are probably what, Dallas, Seattle, Green Bay? Yeah, this is probably a double-digit win team right here, 10, 11, 12 wins.
Yeah, they're looking to string together. This second half of the schedule does not look as imposing as it did before the year.
Yeah. They get extra time for Kansas City, too.
Yep, they get an extra 4 days, 3 days.
Yep. Just like the Redskins get extra time for the Bills. Give me Haskins.
You think that's going to help?
No.
Haskins looks bad. I understand Haskins is – You know, let's take everything for a grain of salt right now. We're not writing Haskins off, but he looked bad last night.
Yeah, I mean, just the stuff with just getting plays called and not getting his team lined up and calling for motions and nobody was supposed to motion and just not comfortable. He needs time.
Do you know what we had the Redskins through the first eight games of the year?
2-6.
We actually had him at 0-8.
Oh, not far off.
Yeah, well, only one game off.
Do we have the Dolphins beating him then?
Yeah, we had the Dolphins beating
him. Oh. Close.
We had Washington starting 0-9 going into their bye week 0-9. So
pretty close.
Yeah, not bad for the preseason predictions. Now, we got a whole other bunch of games to look at here, Joe. What catches your eye? What wets your whistle?
You know, they all do. I think a big one here is going to be Raiders-Texans. Kind of feel like both teams need this game. Texans falling behind a little bit with that loss to the Colts. The Raiders dropped that game to the Packers last week. If they're going to be a legitimate contender for the sixth seed, which I think is very, very, very wide open, it's a team that both of these guys are going to need, especially because it could come down to tiebreakers if the Colts wind up winning the AFC South. So I think that's going to be a very critical game. I get nervous about the Raiders on defense being able to slow down Houston. No pass rush. They trade away Gary and Connolly. They don't have any good linebackers. And I feel like the Texans at home need to win this game. But this is a Texans team that has not been a dominant home team. And I think that needs to change on Sunday to be a big, big shift, I think, based on the results of that game in terms of the landscape of the AFC playoffs.
Yeah, that's a great point as far as the matchups for Houston's offense are pretty favorable, but you've got to go out and execute.
Yeah.
You know, realistically, there is nothing Oakland can present from a pass rush perspective that should challenge Deshaun Watson and the Texans offensive line.
Nope.
The game that jumps out to me, Joe, involves the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
The San Francisco 49ers. This, to me, is a really interesting game. Carolina is 5-0 with Kyle Allen at quarterback.
Dating back to last year, 4-0 this year.
Yeah. Yep. And the 49ers 0-9
with everyone else.
Imagine. That's such a weird stat.
Yeah.
The 49ers have come out like gangbusters to start the year. The haters will say they haven't played anybody, but I'm officially buying in on San Francisco and have for a few weeks after being very hesitant on them to start the year because stylistically their defensive line is so dominant, the run game that they present. So I think San Francisco presents some unique challenges to the Panthers, and they're on both sides of the line of scrimmage. I'm interested to see how well Carolina can counter them. Now, San Francisco's at home. I expect San Francisco to win the game. But if Carolina can counter, because they have some speed in the front seven, and they've got one of the best linebackers in football in Luke Kuechly, if they can counter some of the outside zone and make Jimmy G be the one to try and beat them, that would be an ideal scenario for us as analysts of the game and fans of the game, because Jimmy G really has not been tested yet this year. And if the Carolina Panthers can get San Francisco into that situation, then let's see what that pass rush can do against the 49ers offensive line.
And Carolina coming out of the bye gives them some extra time to prepare for a game, you know, cross country. And one other thing about this North Turner offense that they run in Carolina is part of the reason Kyle Allen's been able to be successful is because it is a quarterback friendly system that is a lot of scheme to manufacture throws, a lot of misdirection. And so, you know, some of that is really designed to take away a really good front seven and a really good pass rush. But, you know, if they can get Kyle Allen off those first reads and have him thinking they're going to clean clock, man, it's going to be rough. You know, Carolina certainly has a chance coming out of the bye. Kyle, can we talk about the Browns real quick? Browns,
yeah,
Patriots,
let's
Jarvis
talk
Landry
about
says
it.
they're Jarvis Landry says they're going to win. What was this clown?
No, he didn't. He didn't say that.
What did
he said?
I read that
he said they're going to Foxborough with the intent to win.
Well, I guess that's every team.
He didn't guarantee a win. Every team. Yeah. And of course, everybody took it out of context. Oh my God, Jarvis Landry guaranteed a win in Foxborough.
It's the first time you've defended Jarvis Landry in your life. Steve Wilks said that if Gennard Avery could be active, he would make a major impact in the game. Well, doesn't he have a say in that? Freddie Kitchens released a quote today on the offensive line. He said, I promise we'll have two tackles, two guards, and a center. What is this football team, man? They're going to go face the New England Patriots in Foxborough?
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to for me is just, man, the leadership of this team really is at the point now where they say something every week that I have to do a double take on. Steve Wilks saying Gennard Avery would make a huge impact for our defense if he was active, while making him a healthy scratch. Makes absolutely zero sense at all. And, you know, he tried to kind of frame this as a numbers game, and that's fine. But, you know, Steve, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but whatever you're trying to do right now really isn't working all that well. So might want to try something different, including getting the guy on the field who you said could make a huge impact for you if he got on the field. Meanwhile, Olivier Vernon, the guy that they traded Kevin Zeitler for, has one sack and five quarterback hits.
Is that it, really? Oh, yeah. That's terrible.
Playing opposite Miles Garrett.
Yeah, and there's they got Rankins and Ogunjobia in the middle. He's getting 1v1s, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeesh. So, really not getting the job done there. But for me, that was one of the things I wrote this week for the Draft Network was Cleveland's window to get this thing turned around is closing very quickly. And there's things Baker Mayfield needs to do for the offense. There's things Freddie Kitchens needs to do to get this team, who is the most penalized team in football, to stop killing themselves. And John Dorsey's got to go out and kind of help cover his ass a little bit because he traded Kevin Zeitler, and he probably shouldn't have in hindsight because the offensive line all around is a hot mess for Cleveland.
Well, they're getting to 2-5 this week. But I don't know that there's a game that I look at the rest of the way and say they can't win it. I mean, they got the Cardinals, too, against the Bengals, Dolphins, Steelers, Bills. Actually, two against the Steelers, right? Yeah, two against the Steelers.
Yeah, two against the Steelers, and I think they play the Bengals
two
twice.
Against Steelers, two against the Bengals, Cardinals, Dolphins, Bills, Ravens, Broncos. I mean, they're going to be 2-5, but you can only have – one more slip up after that. You need to go set. Right. Was that 8-1 or something?
You're hoping to go 10-6.
Yeah. Well, they can. Well, I mean,
which would mean they go 8-1 down the stretch.
I don't know. I don't think the offensive line gets fixed this season. I don't think the secondary gets fixed this season. I don't think their coaching gets.
Well,
fixed.
They're talking about how John Dorsey's been ringing Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen's phone off the hook in Washington trying to get Trent Williams.
Well, that would be a game changer for them. Be a total game changer.
But John Dorsey walked into Cleveland and was sitting on a lion's share of picks and cap space, mm-hmm. right? How would it make you feel if it took two first-round picks to pry Trent Williams from Washington?
I wouldn't do that.
Because anything less doesn't sound like they're Washington's going to be willing to deal.
Trent Williams is, what, 31?
31 years old.
He's had injury problems?
Washington would rather let him rot and not play than trade him for what anything less than what they perceive to be value as. Because Dorsey's been calling him for weeks. Can't get a deal done. So, like, that's where I get scared about the proposition of, yes, it would absolutely be a game changer for Cleveland. But now you're really putting yourself in a position where you have to win. And I get that's the objective, right? Is you have to win. You're in a position with a quarterback on a rookie contract that you believe in. You went all in with Odell Beckham. You went all in trading Zeitler for Olivier Vernon and some of the free agent signings that they've went through this offseason. But I feel like that is a really aggressive move that could really blow up in their face.
Some of the injuries don't help, but everyone's injured right now, and I don't know. It doesn't look good for them. I wonder what the reaction, like, what are the implications? Let's say Cleveland finishes 6-10. What do we do? Do we say, you know what, this didn't work out this year?
You fire Freddie. Fire Freddie. You have to.
Should have never hired him.
Well, it's funny. They hired him in the name of continuity, and they're doing very little like what they did last year.
What else, Kyle? What else?
Joe, very low-key, looking forward to Dolphins-Steelers on Monday Night Football.
It's a good offensive and defensive line for Pittsburgh. And they get Mason back this week, right? Mason Rudolph?
Yeah. They do, yes. Mason Rudolph's been sacked 3 times, which equates to 3% of his dropbacks this year. Pittsburgh in total has given up 5 sacks on the year. Everything that they do, the reason why nobody's sacking Mason Rudolph is everything that they do is such quick balls out of his hands extremely quickly. And I don't mind it. I like it. But with that in mind, you look at the production that Pittsburgh skill players has this year. And not a lot of guys are creating a lot of explosive plays, chunk plays. James Washington averaging 15.6 yards per catch, but it's only on 9 receptions and 21 targets. Juju Smith-Schuster's caught 25 balls for 340 yards, but that includes at least one of 76 yards. So much of what they're doing is within 10, 15 yards of the line of scrimmage, Joe. I don't think the fact that the Dolphins don't have a pass rush won't hurt them in this game because of how Pittsburgh's calling their offense, you know? So it just becomes a question of how does your interior run defense stack up against James Conner, who's averaging 3.2 yards per rush this year. And then can you get anything going offensively if you're the Dolphins? But the Steelers, you know how many turnovers the Steelers have generated the last five games? 15.
Really? So 3 a game.
15 turnovers for the defense in the past very five good games. They got 2 against Seattle, 5 against San Francisco. They got 5 against San Francisco and lost the football game.
That was Mason's first start, right?
Mm-hmm. Then they got 2 against Cincinnati, 3 against Baltimore, game they lost in overtime, and 3 against the Chargers last
week. It's got to be interesting, though, in terms of rooting for this game with the, you know, the goal of high draft picks. If the Dolphins win the game, it pushes that Steelers pick further down, but if they win, it pushes their original pick down. Like, how do you attack that mentally?
If you were ever going to win a game, this would be a game you'd want to sign off on to win, because you're helping your other complementary picks. Like, let's look forward at the rest of the Dolphins schedule and try and find wins. Go ahead.
Okay.
You'll find, well, they play Cincinnati week 16. They play the Jets twice, and they play the Giants. Assuming they win half the games that you could say they have a chance to win, and if they steal this one, now you're talking 3-13. It's not going to kill you to be 3-13.
I think that Miami just needs to get a top two pick.
Yeah.
So,
and even if they pick 3 and Washington's that bad, I'm sorry, Washington is not going to trade or not going to draft a quarterback.
No, but they could trade. They'll trade back.
That's fine. Miami can trade up one spot. It's not going to kill them. They have 2 second round picks.
So let's, like, what would that deal be to go from 3-2?
You know what I mean?
He had to do it.
Well, what was the deal San Francisco did with Chicago in 2017 for Mitch?
Yeah, that wasn't a big deal.
Right.
You just hate to have to give up anything, right?
Yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, you're able to identify your guy and get him. without having to give up anything extra. And I appreciate that sentiment, but that if there was ever a team that was going to be able to afford, I'll give you two this year and a two next year to trade spots with you from 2 to 3.
You hate
the Dolphins could snap their fingers and replicate those twos by trading back the multiple first round picks that they have.
Yeah.
It's not a deal breaker. But Pittsburgh, the rest of the way, Pittsburgh plays Miami. Then they play the Colts, the Rams, the Browns, the Bengals, the Browns, the Cardinals, the Bills, the Jets, the Ravens.
Some losses there.
There's some losses there, but there's probably going to be some wins here. They'll probably take one against Cleveland. They'll probably take the other game against Cincinnati. They'll probably beat the Jets.
So there's at least three.
Man. So now
that could be four.
And then they got to play Miami.
Yeah.
So now you're talking, this team might make a run to 7-9. Interestingly enough, with a backup quarterback, because they're playing such good defense right
now. Yeah. They should. They've got a lot of first round picks on that defense, man.
Yeah. They've really put the screws down in the rushing D as of late, too. They got torched by San Francisco for 168, and then they gave up 73 to Cincinnati, 138 to Baltimore, but 227 total yards to Baltimore in the loss, and then 32 rushing yards last week to the Chargers. Anything else stand out to you this week?
Go Bills.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that real quick before we sign off.
It's an important game, right? I think the Bills are searching for a resume-type win. And I was just talking to Michael Kiss on his podcast, and I don't know if a win over a 3-4 football team at home when you're favored in is a resume win, but I think it would at least get people to perk up a little bit, and maybe some of the people that say the Bills are a paper tiger at 5-1 may respect them a little bit more. It's the Eagles team that needs to have it, right? They've lost two in a row. They've given up 75 points the last two games and scored like a total of 17, getting some really mixed messages from their locker room, from their leaders, from Doug Peterson, the Orlando Scandrick comments today. It's a team that's up against the ropes. And last time they were up against the ropes, Kyle, they were 1-2, went to Lambeau on a Thursday night and beat the Packers. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they respond. With a lot of guys that are going to be hurt, you know, very important players for them that aren't going to be able to play on Sunday. And can the Bills get a resume win at home and really prove some legitimacy behind, you know, their 5-1 start to the season? So I think it's an important game. It's should be a good matchup game in terms of some of the challenges that the Eagles present with some of their physicality, their size at tight end and at receiver with Jeffrey, and of course a good running back in Jordan Howard, a good offensive line against a good Bills defense. But also Josh Allen, who's not been very successful pushing the ball down the field against an Eagles secondary that gives you anything you want vertically. So do you start to see, you know, how do those matchups pan out and who wins the football game? I think it's going to be a good contest.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that scares me most about this game from Buffalo's perspective is that 5-1 against a team who's had some postseason success and absolutely needs the win.
Yeah.
That's a scary dynamic if I'm a Bills fan.
It is. It is. It'd be more scary. I mean, if they don't have their guys, I mean, they might be without Jernigan, Bradham, Avante Maddox, Ron Darby, Jason Peters, DeSean Jackson, Darren Sproles. I mean, that's going to be a big shift. And I don't know, Sean McDermott to me is always kind of an X factor. I believe in him so much as a coach. You don't feel like the team will ever get out schemed or out prepared or out coached. Kind of gives you a chance. You're at home. It's going to come down to can the Bills make enough plays on offense? It's kind of what I always think needs to be the case. And they always seem to find ways to do it. Can they play a full game? We still haven't seen it. Maybe Sunday it'll happen.
Well, what else is going to happen is we're going to come back on Monday and talk about everything that happens this weekend. So come back and visit us again. Take a listen. Hope you guys enjoyed this weekend of college football. Thanks, as always, for listening to the Draft Dudes podcast. If you have hot takes this weekend, send them to @TheJoeMarino. And @GrindingTheTape for next Tuesday's edition of Takes on Takes. And we hope to see you all again on Monday.